You are listening to the Movie Cheer Podcast, the best place for movie topics and blockbuster discussions. Welcome to Movie Cheer Town.
Now, everyone, it's time to spread a bit of movie cheer.
Welcome to the Movie Cheer Podcast, the show for movie fans. I am your host AP, aka Mr. Movie Cheer, and on today's edition of the Movie Cheer Pod, I will be discussing, I'll be taking a time capsule back 10 years ago. 10 years ago to the year of 2013. It is coming up to the end of 2023 at this moment in time, leading into 2024. So I thought, for today's episode, we've done this before on episodes where we looked at different years gone by, years from the past, and I thought, let's go 10 years back in movie history and look at some of the movies from 2013. Some of my favourite movies, some of what I class as the best movies of 2013, I suppose. Yeah, but some of my favourites, I'm going to discuss four movies from 2013 in today's headline topic, ladies and gents. So we're going to take that time capsule back. We're going to go back to 2013. I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be today's headline topic. But before I get to today's headline topic, I will be starting with a segment called What's Been on the Screen. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, what's been on the screen?
What's been on the screen? What have I been watching this past week, ladies and gents? I've watched a few different things, a few movies, been diving into TV shows, but I want to talk about the movies really I've been watching this week, because I've got some tasty ones, some juicy ones, and some brilliant, absolutely brilliant recommendations from people from the Movie Cheer Town community. This is great. So I love it when I get recommendations from people. And this is a week where I've delved into some of those finally that I should have. Some of them I've not watched. I've been recommending them for a while and I've just not got around to watching them. But let's get to it. I'm rambling. Let's get to the choices, the movies I watched this past week. The first movie I want to discuss is The Talented Mr. Ripley, released in 1999, starring Matt Damon as Ripley, and then you have Jude Law in this movie, Gwyneth Paltrow. He plays Tom Ripley, is the main character, Matt Damon's character. This is a movie because I kind of don't want to spoil it too much. So I will say ahead of the game here, because even though it's a movie that's 20 years old now, this is a movie. If you spoil it and stuff, it kind of would ruin it, really. So, spoilers ahead for this movie, because I genuinely don't want to spoil it for other people who've never seen this film. So spoilers ahead, ladies and gents. First of all, this was recommended to me by Philip Coghill. Philip's been on the channel a few times. He's a great guy. He's got a cool channel as well. So I just want to say a big thank you to Philip for the great recommendation, buddy. I appreciate it. Recommended this, The Talented Mr. Ripley. So this movie is kind of... The way I would describe this movie is the movie, the Tom Hanks movie, Catch Me If You Can, with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks. It's kind of a bit like that, but with more of like a crime thriller. Like, there's a lot of like, there's murders in this movie. It's like kind of a very dark version of Catch Me If You Can. That's the way I felt like watching this. That's the vibes I got. So this is a movie that is based in the 1950s, and I'm pretty sure Catch Me If You Can was kind of like a similar time period, if I'm right. This is based on a book. It's not based on true events, even though I know Catch Me If You Can did say at the time it was based on true events, but I know like years later, recently, it's come out like none of the events were actually true, apparently. That's what I read somewhere anyway. The Talented Mr. Ripley, it's this very dark story. So you've got this guy who Matt Damon's character plays. He's a very talented piano player, And you see at the start of the movie, he steps in to help out some friend playing piano, and she's singing this woman at this sort of this gala, all these rich people are there, and he lends this Princeton jacket. And Princeton is apparently it's like a big university in America, like a very high class one by the sounds of it, very top tier university. I don't know. I'm not American, am I? I'm only going off the basis of what the film's showing me. But he lends his jacket and kind of then implies to one of the guests at this gala that he went to Princeton himself, even though he's just lending this jacket to play the piano in. And then one of the parents, this gentleman there and this lady, they say to him, oh, do you know my son who went to Princeton as well? And he pretends that he knew their son, even though he didn't even go to Princeton. This leads him into going on to this trip. The father hires Tom Ripley to go and find his son in this country and get him back because he's, you know, he's going a bit wayward in this country. He's dating a woman they don't like. They feel like he's going off the rails a bit, and they want him to go back because they think he's a friend of their son, because he's a con artist, basically, this guy, Tom Ripley, Matt Damon's character. He's a con artist. He's a compulsive liar, and he's very good at lying until we see further on the movie, you know, everything kind of comes undone in a way. But yeah, he goes to this country, and then he meets up with Jude Law's character, who's the son of this rich guy, and then he pretends that he actually knows Jude Law's character and that they went to university, and he kind of just goes along with it and is like, okay, we went to university. And then you see this really weird story develop, and at first he seems kind of like harmless, Matt Damon's character, Tom Ripley, but then you see, as the story progresses, he becomes very, very insane, very Norman Bates like. He becomes very possessive. You see, he is obviously he has feelings. You know, he likes men rather than women. He's obviously a homosexual man in the 1950s, because you see the story develop. He you know, has a crush on Jude Law's character. Obviously, in the 1950s, this probably wasn't, you know, something that is, you know, like gay people nowadays. That's fine. I'm okay with that. I'm completely fine with that. But in 1950s, we've seen stories, we've heard stories in 90, like years gone by, how you know, how times have changed. A gay man in the 1950s would have been treated a lot differently than a gay man today. And you know, I think. It's, you know, I'm getting off track here. I'm stumbling upon my words. Basically, yeah, if you're gay in the 1950s, things don't probably work out well for you, really, do they? You know, what's that story? I'm trying to think of the Imitation Game. Imitation Game, the Alan Turing, you know, prime example of what I'm kind of getting at here. But basically, he has obviously impulses for Jude Law's character, and you see him, you know, he's fallen in love with him, and Jude Law's character is not gay, or he kind of like implies he's not gay. We don't kind of really know in this story. And then we see them go out. They basically go out on this canoe trip, and he makes advances at him and it doesn't work out, and he pushes him back. Then, you know, spoiler one, he ends up killing Jude Law's character. This is where, you know, I didn't expect the story to go to this point, because it just goes to like a, this is like point where I thought he was just going to be this. I thought, you know, he obviously had an interest in him romantically. I thought, yeah, maybe it's not going to work out, and he's just going to take his identity, because you can see throughout the story, he's kind of like learning Jude Law's signature, learning about all his money and stuff like that. And then basically what he does, he pretends to be Jude Law's character. And you see him after he's killed him, you know, going around the country. People think he's Jude Law's character. Some people don't. And then we see this big story develop, and then he goes on a bit of a killing spree, killing some of Jude Law's character's friends. And then the finale of it kind of feels like he has like a bit of a happy ending. He goes off on this boat with his new romantic interest, this gentleman who is another friend, associate of Jude Law's character. And basically, a woman he met at the start of the movie, and who he pretends to be someone else, kind of like dogs him in for, you know, being a totally different person. Well, she doesn't dug in, but he knows that she's going to obviously tell, and he's everything's going to get spoiled from his identity is going to be revealed. And then in the end, it doesn't show it, but it does the sound of him killing this, you know, this guy who he loves at the end, and you think he's going to go off and have this happy ending with, and he just murders him. And he's obviously saying throughout the movie, you know, he kind of like says like he can lock stuff away and stuff like that. And he's obviously a sociopath. He's a psychopath. And it's such a very unique story and not the film I kind of, when Phil recommended this movie, I've heard of this movie and funny enough, a family relative recommended it more recently as well, mentioned it. And I thought, you know what, this is one Phil's recommended, so I'm going to have to watch this. So I've had a few people mention this film saying it's really good. And yeah, really, really an intense movie, very dark, lots of twists and turns. The character work in it is great. I love the character development. You don't really know which way it's going to go. And that's what I loved about this movie. And the character Matt Damon played is so complex because he's having relationships with females, with men, but he's trying to hide his identity, his true identity, yet he's taking on identities. It's such a like a just a tangled tale, tangled story, but it has a really good like development throughout, and I feel like it has a really good finish to it. I think it really works really well, the story, and I really enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it. Yeah, it's not one I'd watch all the time because it's a long movie. It is a long movie, this one, but I really did enjoy it. It was a really good movie to watch. And just go through the cast as well. You've got Kate Blanchett in there, Philip Seymour Hoffman as well. Some really great cast in there, great actors in there. The next movie I want to discuss is My Cousin Vinny. This is a 1992 comedy movie. I'd probably say it's like comedy, part drama at times as well. More of a comedy though. This is another one recommended by another great member of the Movie Cheer Town community. This was recommended by Raymond Voss. Now, I got to say big apologies to Raymond. Raymond recommended this movie to me about 2 years ago. Now, I must say, I put every movie that gets recommended to me, I put it in a list on my phone. So I do get around to eventually watching the movies. This is a great point. This is a movie recommended about 2 years ago and finally just got around to watching it. I've been meaning to watching it, but you know what it's like, another movie comes out, something comes up. So I just want to say thank you very much to Raymond for the recommendation. Thank you for the patience, buddy, with me for watching this movie. But yeah, this is a really fun comedy movie. I wouldn't say it's like a laugh out loud comedy. I will say that. It's like I said, it's comedy. It's got a bit of drama mixed in there as well. It's not kind of like a Dumb and Dumber comedy, this one. But it stars Joe Pesci. This is My Cousin Vinny. It stars Joe Pesci as Vinny Gambino. He's a lawyer, very much an amateur lawyer in this movie. You have Ralph Macchio from Karate Kid. And you have Marissa Tomei in this movie as well. This movie, you know, the kind of the script, the basic plot of this movie is Ralph Macchio, his character and his friend are going on like a bit of a road trip from college, and they go into the shop and they basically get done for a crime they didn't commit. They go into the shop and they go out of the shop, nothing happens, and well, they think they've accidentally stole some tuna, basically. They've not committed any massive crimes, and then it turns out someone in the shop was murdered shortly after they had left the shop. So they are then, the two characters are framed for the murder. They're not framed for the murder. They are thought to be the murderers. They're put in prison and they're like, they need to get a lawyer, and it's that expensive. And he's like, Ralph Macchio's character is on the phone to his mum, and he's like, great, I've got my cousin Vinny. My cousin Vinny's a lawyer. And it turns out his cousin Vinny is a lawyer, but he has never been in a courtroom. It's kind of like all like accident claims sort of things, all dealt with outside of court. And it took him years to complete his bar test to become a lawyer. And this is Joe Pesci's character. And he's a really bad lawyer. And the story really is about him becoming a better lawyer, really. Because he goes in there and he's just like, he's in his like, it's in a country sort of place, and he comes from the city, from New York, comes in there and he's dressing in like his city attire, and the judge is like, you've got to dress in a suit. And you see this progress that he's got to like dress up like a real lawyer and learn about the courtroom and really accomplish being a lawyer. And no, by the end of the story, you know, it turns out to be a good ending, and he does succeed in this movie. But it is a really, that is like the joy. It's like this underdog story, really, to be honest. It's an underdog comedy, really. Kind of in liken it to something like a Dodgeball, where you've got this guy who's really bad at his job, but then he's got to become the best he can be to win the battle, win the court case, and which he does in the end. What I will say, Marissa Tomei is a standout for me in this movie. I think she's great. She plays the girlfriend of Joe Pesci's character, Vinny. I will say, though, as well, Joe Pesci, I think this is the first movie I have watched with Joe Pesci in where he's actually a likable character, because every other movie plays like the bad guy, Home Alone, Goodfellas, you know, is it Goodfellas? Or am I getting, yeah, Casino, you know, Casino, he's the bad guy. A lot of movies, Joe Pesci plays the bad guy in his movies. This is a movie where I was watching it, and it's like he's a likable character, he's a lovable character, this like lovable rogue in a way. And yeah, I really enjoyed this film. This is one I could watch over and over again. Just a very easy watching movie, and some really funny moments were like, for instance, he's going in this bar where his missus has been done out of money, and he goes in and he goes up to this big guy who's done his girlfriend out of money. He's like, give me the money back. And he's like, every time he sees him, he says he wants the money back. And the guy, like, sometimes will give him like short change on the money. And he says at the end, he said, like, I'll fight you for that money. And then at the end, he sort of like, this big guy says, I'm prepared for fighting. Joe Pesci's character just comes up to him, and he's in a rush because he's panicking over getting to the court or something. And he just smacks him. And obviously, Joe Pesci is not a tall guy. So he's just like this small guy versus a tall guy. And he just walks across the street, smacks him in the face, and he just falls to the ground. It's a funny, funny movie in parts like that. Like I said, it's not Dumb and Dumber comedy, but it is subtle comedy, and I think it really works with this story. And the story throughout is really a good story as well. You know, him and his partner trying to suss out what actually happened on the crime. You know, why did it happen? And he goes around like investigating as well, asking people questions. Yeah, and it's a really good story, this one. I really did enjoy it. So that is My Cousin Vinny, and that has been what's been on the screen, what I've been watching over this past week. Again, I just want to say a big thank you to Phil and to Raymond for the recommendations on those two movies. Now let's move on to today's headline topic.
The Movie Cheer Podcast presents the headline topic for the episode.
Remember to spread a
headline topic. Headline topic.
Remember to spread a bit of movie cheer.
So today's headline topic, movies from the year 2013. We're taking that time capsule back 10 years to 2013, recording this in 2023, the end of 2023. I've got four movies to discuss from the year 2013, ladies and gents. Now, these may be maybe not the highest grossing movies. They may not be your favourite movies. These are kind of my favourites, some of my favourites, because there's some I've definitely missed off as well, some really great movies. Iron Man 3 is certainly not one of them. I will say that now in advance. Iron Man 3 was out in 2013, and that movie, as you know, is a movie I dislike. I do not like Iron Man 3. I would not. I'm just, you know, just so you know, a little tidbit of information. You won't be getting Iron Man 3 mentioned at any point during these four movie recommendations. So there we go. Well, let's get to the first movie of 2013 that I really like. And this is actually one I've watched only this past week, ladies and gents. So it's been on the screen this past week for me. And this is the movie Rush, directed by Ron Howard, released in September of 2013, starring Daniel Brühl as Nicky Lauder and Chris Hemsworth as James Hunt, who are both Formula One drivers. And this is it's kind of like a biopic of Niki Lauda and James Hunt's character as they were in the 1976 season, and were Niki Lauda had a very tragic crash, a very really bad accident that really scarred him for life. Literally, he had a really bad crash. He got burned really bad, and it was, you know, the story leading up to that and the story, the aftermath of that after the accident, how he dealt with that and what he did after that. So that's kind of the basis of the story here. Look, I will say, I've watched F1 in the past. I'm not a big Formula One fan, I'll be honest. I don't watch it now. I watch it occasionally when it's on TV, but I used to watch a few, I think it was when maybe 10 years ago now, 10 plus years. I watched it for a while and I got really into it, and then it kind of just went off it. Just, I don't know, just didn't have the time maybe, or just lost interest in it. But yeah, I did used to like it. So it's one of those sports I can appreciate, F1. And I can appreciate, especially back in like the 70s, how unsafe it was. And especially you see it here, I didn't realize how many drivers were injured and how many deaths they had back then. It was crazy. Like, I think they had like two deaths a season or something, probably more. Or some of the injuries were crazy. And so yeah, this still tells like the obviously Chris Hemsworth of Thor fame, and then you have Daniel Bruhl. He played Zemo in the Winter Soldier and the Avengers movies and the Captain America at the Winter Soldier and Falcon TV show as well. So two very high profile actors in there as well in these roles. So it tells to the sort of like the origins of the rivalry. They had a big rivalry, these two guys. They kind of didn't like each other from the word go. From F3, Formula 3, which is like the lower leagues of F1, leading up to Formula 1, which is like the top tier of Formula 1 racing. And it shows this rivalry. It goes onto the pitch and onto the racetrack. And then it goes into telling this story, the rivalry throughout the season. Niki Lauda is winning in this particular season. And James Hunt, he is just behind. He's quite far behind on the points to Niki Lauda. And Niki Lauda, just to summarize the two characters, Niki Lauda is very much a very disciplined driver. He really respects the art of Formula One in this story you learn. And, you know, he's very much, you know, very good with engineers and sort of like working out the dynamics of the car. Whereas James Hunt is this party animal guy, this party guy played by Chris Hemsworth, who is just like really, let's drive fast and let's just go for it, pedal to the metal. And that is his sort of like his framework. So they're very, you know, chalk and cheese, these two guys, very different ends of the spectrum, both these guys. But we see the story, the lead up, and you know, we see the season, the lead up before the season, their origins, and then we lead up to this real life event that happened, all a true story, and the crash. You can actually see footage on YouTube, and I watched the footage before watching the movie, and the way they recreate it in the movie is off some of the footage they had back then, because they didn't have that much footage back then, and they recreate it really, you know, really well recreated it. It's unreal. It's like uncanny how unreal it is. So he has this crash, and basically Niki Lauda's character is leading and the scoreboard, and he has a meeting before this race because there's like really bad rain at this racetrack, and he has like a driver's meeting. He leads the meeting saying we should not race today. It's unsafe. People have been getting, you know, hurt. And they all go against him, led by James Hunt, by his character. And they say, well, the race is going to go ahead. They go on the race, and basically he gets stopped in the pits, Niki Lauda's character. So now he has to make up time, and he's never about racing fast. And he kind of like breaks his own rules and goes really, really quick. And then you see him just crash really badly, and these other cars go into him. Really bad smash. His car goes on fire. He's burnt alive. He's burnt really bad. And he's then in hospital for like 40 days. And the story is, you think, you know, that would be him done and dusted. He comes back to Formula One after about 40 days and races again. And he does really well in his first couple of races. He doesn't win that season as well. James Hunt carried the wins the season. But it does show years later, he won the F1 again and he continued to race, even though he had he had to have like skin grafts and everything. His face was all burnt. His ear was burnt. His face was really, really badly burnt. It's really, really sad to see. But the way, I got to say, the story here, incredibly inspiring. Incredibly inspiring. I was watching this movie and it really inspired me. I thought the grit this guy had. And this guy only passed away a couple of years ago, Niki Lauda. And I remember seeing him, at the F1 races, seeing him on TV and stuff like that. He was always involved in the F1. To see the grit and the determination in this story, this is Niki Lauda's story, really. He's the way he come back after that and, shows that the grit. And then you see they had that rivalry, but they respected each other in the end. And James Hunt really respected him and he felt sorry that, he went against him. He felt like it was his fault. But Niki Lauda didn't feel that way. He didn't have any regret really about it. He felt, what's done is done. It made him stronger in a way, and I really enjoyed it. So yeah, Rush, great movie, September 2013. Next, I'm going to move on to a movie is definitely a divisive a movie that splits opinions. This movie, Man of Steel, released in June of 2013, directed by Zack Snyder. Starring Henry Cavill as Kal-El, Superman, and Amy Adams as Lois Lane. You have Michael Shannon in there as well as General Zod. This movie, I really enjoy this movie. I'm a big Zack Snyder fan. I'm looking forward to this new sci-fi franchise he's doing soon, Rebel Moon. That's going to be great to see. But we're talking about Man of Steel right now. Should this Superman movie have been made as it is? Or should we have got a different Superman movie? Would a different Superman movie been better for DC? Because we see now the recasting the character of Superman again. They're doing a reboot. It's kind of not really worked out. We've had like a 10-year project, really, of this incarnation of the DC comic universe. I personally think what we've got out of it, I've enjoyed the kind of like the Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, and the Justice League Snyder Cut. I like that. And I think it's a very different superhero trilogy of movies, which I really enjoy. It's very different to the Marvel stuff, and that's why I kind of do like it a lot. Is this a Superman we really needed back then? I think the whole point with the DC universe, they were competing heavily with Marvel back then. I think now it's kind of like we do our own thing now, but they were kind of doing their own thing, but they were like, we have to get to this Justice League movie dead quickly. We have to hit it off the park with the Superman movie. And I think they went in this direction of Zack Snyder, went kind of the way the Dark Knight trilogy went. They've looked at that and thought, let's do a more darker tone for this Superman character. Was it right? Was it wrong? I enjoyed, but I get why people don't enjoy it, because I think Superman is a bit more, not lighthearted, but just a bit more, less dark and moody, as a Batman character. Is a bit more, have a lighter touch, a lighter tone, I suppose, a lighter quality. And this movie certainly didn't have it. It had a tone, I think this was darker than the Batman movies, if I'm being honest. It was a really gritty, dark tone to it. The story, the battles between him and Zod was really dark. Really, really gritty and very, very an emotional story as well, this one. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. Should it have been different? If it was that lighter tone, would it have done better? It's hard to say. I think probably, I do think, all being said, even though I do enjoy this movie, I think a lighter tone Superman movie probably would have done better if it was more aligned to the Christopher Reeves, but just like a modern take. I think it might have worked out a bit better. I think maybe they could have built a new universe around that. Overall, I think they rushed the universe anyway. Even though I enjoyed it, they were rushing it with the characters. It was too quick to get to this join-up movie, this Justice League movie. It would have been better if they built it up over a few more years and just like maybe 10, 15 years, then do the Justice League movie. It was all very much rushed. They didn't really give it time to... I mean, this would have been great to see a Man of Steel trilogy, or at least a sequel to, you know, a direct sequel, a direct Superman sequel, which we never got. It was obviously straight away into this, the team ups, the collaborations with other characters. Well, yeah, I think it is a great movie of 2013. It's crazy to think it was released then. I remember like the first few images that came out with the new suit, and you know, the big differences with the suit were it didn't have like the red underpants. You know what I'm talking about, the red Superman underpants. It didn't have that. It just had a belt, and it kind of went, it was just blue rather than that. And I thought the outfit looked 10 times better than like the underpants. And it's all childish, but it did, it looked amazing. I remember the images that first came out of it, just showing him, and he was like, I'd never seen this Henry Cavill in anything else before, and I kind of wasn't sure on him, but I think he nailed the role. I thought he was great in the role. Personally, like I said, I enjoy the tone of the movie. I think Zack Snyder's movies have definitely got a distinctive tone to them. You either like them or you don't, and I get that. Certain directors I don't enjoy, but I did like this movie, and I think it was a solid superhero movie, a solid Superman movie, very different Superman movie. Look, let me say this. I don't think we're ever going to get a Superman movie with the tone this had ever again. I think any other Superman movie in the future is going to be a lot lighter in tone, probably more aligned to something you get like a Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe a bit of emotion there, but I think it's going to be a bit more closer to what the, you know, the Christopher Reeve movies were like. I feel like that's the way they're going to go personally. But yeah, top movie of 2013. And now let's go to an animated movie. We're going to talk about Monsters University, released also in June of 2013, competing with Superman Man of Steel the same month. This is a prequel to Monsters, Inc. So it's set years before, tells the origin story of Billy Crystal's character Mike and John Goodman's character Sully, the way they met, how they got to being best friends in Monsters, Inc. Now, I will say, I love Monsters, Inc. It's one of my favourite Pixar movies of all time. I think it's fantastic. I really enjoy, actually, the Monsters at Work animated show they've done recently. It's a sequel to Monsters, Inc. Really worth checking out. It's a hidden gem that I think it's not being talked about as much as it should be. A really good show. This story, so this one is, it's them going to this university for monsters where they train monsters to scare kids in the world of monsters. And basically the story goes, they break this device and Mike and Sully, and they're about to get expelled, but they say if they can win the scare competition, this like prestigious competition to the headmaster, will they, you know, accept them and let them continue. And they agree because she thinks there's no way they'll win the competition. And then they end up having to team up. They're like rivals at the start of the movie. They don't like each other. And then they have to team up on this like campus, what do they call, like the fraternities over there. They start this monster fraternity and this team where they have to go through these scare challenges. And then we see them, you know, progress throughout this movie, and it comes to a good conclusion. And it really, again, it shows the friendship, the growing friendship between these movies. Now, is it as good as the original, Monsters, Inc.? For me, Monsters, Inc. can't be touched. It's such a great movie. I think what I will say, though, it is a worthy sequel, prequel, whatever you want to call it, a follow-up to that story, and fills in the gaps before that movie. I think it's a really good animated movie. I like the story. It's fun. It's a family movie. You know, I don't think it's got the charm as the first one, and the kind of the emotional. I think the thing with Monsters, Inc., it really has that emotional touch to it, because you know, you've got the kid Boo, and that emotion with Sully and Mike and Boo, they become them father figures to the kid, and when they're having to let go of her and take her back home, it's a very emotional story. Whereas Monsters University doesn't really have that kind of story. It's very much like more of a fun comedy Pixar movie, I would say, rather than an emotional story of, you know, it's not got the same story, which I think is good in a way. You know, it's, they tried something different, and personally I think it's one I didn't watch originally in 2013. I watched it years later. I remember getting it on, I think I watched it on TV first. It was on like BBC over Christmas or something like that a few years back. I watched it and I really enjoyed it, and then get it on DVD, and I watched it several times since, and yeah, really a movie I really do enjoy. So yeah, Monsters University, 2013, directed by Dan Scanlon. Great movie, great animated movie of that year. Now let's go to the fourth and final movie of 2013 I want to discuss, ladies and gents. And the final movie is a movie called Oblivion. That's right, Oblivion. Not the video game. Oblivion, nothing to do with that video game. Oblivion is a totally nothing to do with that. Oblivion is a science fiction movie released in 2013. Well, obviously, because it's a 2013 episode. It released in April of 2013. This is a movie I've discussed on the channel a few times. I really do like this movie. This was directed by Joseph Kosinski. Now, this name is a name I think, you know, a lot of people would have heard now, or they're going to hear in years to come. He's directed Tron Legacy, which I really enjoy. He, you know, directed Oblivion, which is a really cool movie. This movie didn't do that well money-wise. It wasn't really a box office hit, but it stars Tom Cruise, and there's a link up here in the future. He also directed the Top Gun Maverick movie as well, which was hugely popular, hugely successful, this director. And this is the pre-Top Gun Maverick team-up of these two, Tom Cruise and Joseph Kosinski. It's, without spoiling it too much, it's a very mysterious science fiction movie. So Tom Cruise's character also stars Morgan Freeman in this movie. But basically his character, it's in the year 2077. And basically he wakes up, his brain has been wiped, and they know he's aware his brain's been wiped from, he can't remember his past. It's the year 2077, and in the year 2017, the Earth was attacked by like these alien scavengers. And this is what we're told early on in the movie. And basically, he is this repairman engineer of these drones. So he has to go up around the planet. The planet is derelict. Him and this lady, this female character, are the only two people on Earth that were told at the start of this movie. And very mystery, but they're like the last people on Earth, and they're contacting people in space. And the plan is to go up into space to start this new colony in a few weeks. And basically, they won the battle years ago against the aliens, but there's still some leftover scavengers on the planet. So they have to go around fixing up these drones to defeat these scavengers. And then we find, you know, there's a lot of mystery to the story, to his character, to his background, and we see him kind of like fishing around in on planet Earth, and you know, a few weird events happen, and he investigates them, and he kind of investigates what's truly going on planet Earth, and what is going on with these drones, these scavengers. What is the truth out there, and what is the true, you know, the truth about his history, his background as well. And it's delving into that, and it's a really good science fiction story, really underrated science fiction movie as well. It's got a great soundtrack by M83 as well, which I really enjoy. I think the soundtrack is epic. It really adds a really grand feel to this movie. So it's a solid movie. Yeah, so that's Oblivion, released in 2013. Another great one from that year of movies. And yeah, a solid year of movies, 2013. Like I said, there's so many great movies that I missed off the list as well. But yeah, let me know some of your favorite movies from 2013, ladies and gents. So that's the end of today's headline topic. Let's move on with the rest of the show.
Case covers take on other case covers. Can you handle it?
Case cover collision. Case cover collision.
Case cover collision. Each and every week, I choose a different movie and look at the different case covers for that movie and put them up against each other on case cover collision to find out which one is the best case cover. Now, on this week's edition of Case Cover Collision, I will be looking at the movie Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. The case covers for that movie. I got three different case covers to look at. We got the DVD cover, which also acts for the Blu-ray and the 4K as well, a standard 4K. And we've also got two limited edition steelbooks, ladies and gents, as well. So I'm going to look at those three different covers. What I will say, I've not watched this movie as of yet. I am a big Mission Impossible fan. You're probably saying, well, why didn't you go and see it at the cinema, AP? Well, I will say I didn't go and see it at the cinema because I'm a lazy so-and-so. And yes, but I will watch it when it comes to, I know, I think it's out on home release now. I've just not got around to watching it, if I'm being honest. But yeah, a big fan of the franchise. I've heard great things about this movie. I've seen the trailers. I've seen that huge stunt in this movie. It looks phenomenal. I'm looking forward to watching this. So let's get to the case covers. I'm going to start off with the DVD. And as I said, this one also is the same cover for the Blu-ray and the standard 4K as well, ladies and gents. So let's look at this. Standard 4K, standard DVD. So this is, you know, it features all the different characters in this movie. We've got front and center in a very, you know, the biggest person on the screen here, Tom Cruise. He kind of looking into the bottom corner or looking into the distance a bit. To the left, looking at this, and he's, you know, it's a white background, and then it kind of like it drifts into like the background of the sky, and then you see Tom Cruise's character again just looking, he's got a suit on, looking into the distance, and then you see all the different other characters underneath, you know, Sam Pegg's character, few other characters here, Hayley Atwell, her character, few different ones, Rebecca Ferguson, all here, the different characters looking into the distance, looking into the different areas of this image. And then we see at the bottom of it, it looks like there was one of the stunts throughout the movies. It looks like a train, I think, and it looks like some character, I imagine it's Tom Cruise running up a train. Again, I've not seen that particular part in the movie, so I don't know how, you know, how much of a big impact in the movie. I imagine it's probably a big part of the movie or a big action scene in the movie. Below that, again, you've got it on a slant. It's kind of like on like a 45 degree angle here. So it would be a 45 degree, like a corner sort of like angle, like a triangle. Yeah, so like it's like slanted. I'm really bad here. 90 degrees, yeah, 45 degree angle. You see it then in a blue background and a white text. Tom Cruise is name because, you know, he's a headline showcase actor of this movie. Below that, you have Mission Impossible in a small red font, and then you see underneath that in a black color the Dead Reckoning text, part one. Below that, it very, you know, the text isn't big here, it's more focused on, you know, the characters that are featured in this movie. Tom Cruise again, slap bang center of this case cover here. Look, I don't think it screams like excitement, but it screamed. I think it just showed this looks like I wouldn't say it looks like a spy movie because it doesn't really look like that. I think for me, this is like acknowledging that you already know the franchise, you know the characters, you know that Mission Impossible is Tom Cruise's baby, and you know the characters already. So I think that this is for fans of the franchise. In the distance as well, what I really like, you see in a black silhouette, very, very small little like thing I've only just noticed now, the bike that he does that stunt. You see the black silhouette of it, and it's obviously drawn in, and then you see his body floating through midair, and it's like flying into his head, and like it looks like the bike is flying into his ear. I like that. That's a really nice little touch there in the background. I've only just noticed that, but look, it's a fairly basic cover, nothing breaking any boundaries, but I think it works for this movie. I think it works as a cover for fans who know about the movie. I think if you don't know Mission Impossible, you're probably never going to watch it anyway. So it's one of those where I think it just works for Mission Impossible fans. So yeah, I think it works. I think it's not like, I think like, you know, the classic Mission Impossible cover from the first movie, there's that great cover of him, you know, his face side on. That's a great one. I love that cover. This one, not quite memorable. I think it's a very standard cover, but I think it works, like I said. Now, let's move on to the second case cover we're going to look at. It's the first of the limited edition steelbook. So this is the Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 4K plus Blu-ray steelbook. So you get both the Blu-ray and the 4K included, by the looks of it here. Let's just say, first of all, this for me is amazing. It kind of, again, it doesn't really describe what the Mission Impossible spy genre is, but I think it's such an epic cover, this. If you watch the trailers and you know about that stunt, because that stunt where he jumps off the cliff on the motorbike and he, you know, he gets his parachute or something, then this is the cover. So we see it here, it's a cloudy background, and then you see the sky. Underneath that, at the bottom of the screen, bottom of the case cover, you see these snowy mountains. And then above that, in the middle of it, you've got it going down, the text going down, sort of like side on. So it's not like it's Mission Impossible going up the screen in this white text, solid white text, a lot larger than the last text in the middle of the screen, but going from the bottom of the screen to the top of the screen. So it's not like straight on where you would look at it, like a 90 degree. It's like turned on its side, this writing, and it's going all the way up to the top. At the top of it, then you've got Tom Cruise's his name in a red color, a red font. And then we have Dead Reckoning below the at the very bottom of the screen, part one, in this red color again and the same font. And then in front of that, you've got his body again, and it's kind of like a black silhouette again. I don't know if I'm going to zoom into it on my phone here. I've got the image on my phone, and so it's not really a black silhouette. It's actually him, the image of him flying through the sky. There's the motorbikes beneath him in midair, and he's in midair with his parachute on, and that's the shot from the movie, and that is so epic. I absolutely love this cover because it's kind of like Mission Impossible. He's doing what is impossible to get to, you know, do the mission basically. And this is the stunt he does to try and, beat the Mission Impossible. And yeah, I think it's a cracking cover, this. I think it's spectacular. I just love that they featured that really, you know, that big stunt from the movie, which it got a lot of people talking about this movie. So for me, so far, this is solid. I think it beats the DVD cover. I think it's such a different type of cover. And I think it just really, people are going to see that straight away and they're going to be, oh, I remember that. That's that Mission Impossible movie, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It's the stunt from the new Mission Impossible. That's ace. Cracking cover. Unreal. Great cover. Great looking cover. And a great looking stunt as well. A marvelous stunt. Anyway, let's move on to the next case cover. And this is the second Mission Impossible. So this is the Dead Reckoning Part 1 again. Another 4K and Blu-ray steelbook, which features both the Blu-ray and 4K. Now, again, this is a part of the movie where, obviously, I've not seen the movie, so I don't know about this particular stunt. So it looks like a train that's, I think it's definitely a train. It's someone's hanging off it, so I imagine that's Tom Cruise. So it's in a cartoon form, so it's kind of like artistically done, a bit cartoony, the way it's been, it's like it's been sketched rather, it's a photo, accurate photo. So this one, a very different looking cover to the last past two. It is a red background, so they kind of took the colouring from the text of Dead Reckoning, Mission Impossible on the previous ones. They've done a red background, plain red. And then you've got this MI in like this big black font. They're all the text on these different covers are all in like weird sort of like like directions on the screen. So it's like kind of like facing down the font. We've got Tom Cruise's name above it in black again, and then you've got Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, side on below the MI, and then you've got this train kind of like smashing from the big I letter in the MI and smashing down. It's big train, and it's in like the black, same black colour, this cartoony sort of like drawn, hand-drawn look, and then you see him hanging off it at the bottom of the screen. As I said, I think it is his character anyway. So I think, for me, what I would say here, I think it's cool because that they featured another stunt, another, you know, action scene from the movie in this particular case cover. But I will say, if I'm thinking about this movie, even though I've not watched it yet, the big stunt is the bike, him jumping off that. Could they have featured it again and done something slightly different? I think it would have been great to see another incarnation of that, him, you know, driving off that mountain, jumping midair here again. I get it, they've done something different, and I like that, and maybe this is a really significant part of the movie, so I can't really say because I've not seen the movie. Maybe you'll say, yes, it is AB. But going from what I know of the movie so far, I would have featured the bike again in a different incarnation, in this red colour, but went for the bike stunt instead, personally. But let's see which one is the best, which one is the winner of today's case cover collision. I have got to give it to the second 4K and Blu-ray steelbook, the one with the bike stunt. I think it is fantastic. I love that. I love that it just took a shot from the movie. I think it's great. I think it looks real. I love the lettering of Mission Impossible. I think it's really bold as well. The font stands out. I think it's great. A great looking cover really does justice. And I think it really is a one that stands out when you're going down the movie aisle in a shop. Love it. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, the first one I looked at, the Blu-ray Steelbook, is the winner of this week's edition of Case Cover Collision. Now let's move on to the next segment of today's show. That is the Amazon Top 10.
The Amazon Top 10 is approaching. Prepare yourself. 10. 9. 8. 7. 6. 5. 4. 3. 2. 1. The Amazon Top 10 has arrived.
The Amazon Top 10. Each and every week I give you the Amazon Top 10, the best sellers list on amazon.co.uk for movies, for DVDs, Blu-rays and 4Ks, ladies and gents. Let's look at that Top 10 list this week. So starting at number 10, we have Oppenheimer on 4K. Still not seeing that one. Number 9, we have the Super Mario Brothers on Blu-ray. Great movie, I love that. Number 8, we have Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Another solid movie, that's the Blu-ray of that one. Number 7, you know, we mentioned it on Case Cover Collision this week. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, the Blu-ray. That's that same cover as the DVD case cover. That's at number 7. At number 6, we have the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the theatrical and extended editions. I will say as well, we've had the Black Friday sales start this past week. So a lot of these, probably some of them are priced down in the sales. That's why, you know, Lord of the Rings is in there. They usually do sales on some of these past properties to, you know, get more people buying them, which is great to see. Great to see Lord of the Rings in the top 10 as well. That's at number 6. At number 5, we have Transformers Rise of the Beast on DVD. At number 4, we have Oppenheimer on Blu-ray. That's Oppenheimer on Blu-ray at number 4. At number 3, we have the DVD of Barbie, the Barbie movie. At number 2, we have Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 on DVD. And at number 1, we have on DVD Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is leading the pack as number 1 on the Amazon Top 10 this week, ladies and gents. So that's it for the Amazon Top 10. Let's move on to the next segment of today's show and the final segment of today's show as well. That is Not So Worthy Blockbuster Housekeeping. This is the part of the show where we kind of just wind down the show, discuss what's going on with the channel, what's going on with the Movie Cheer Town community as well. So first of all, I just want to say a big thank you to the Ghoulish Mean Cheer for presenting the Halloween special about 2 weeks ago now. I've not spoken to the Ghoulish Mean Cheer, but I've watched the episode and I want to say, Mean Cheer, thank you very much. And as always, you're always welcome to host an episode in Movie Cheer Town. Appreciate it. That was a fun episode. And yeah, it was good to watch and good to see Mean Cheer having a great time as well. What else has been going on in Movie Cheer Town? I will say, last week I put up the video, the quick topics video, and I gotta say, wow, biggest turnaround of people watching a video in a week I've ever seen on the channel. It's had 1,500 plus views in less than a week, which is crazy. The comments, there's been tons of comments. It's had loads of new subscribers as well from this video. But just the amount of views on that video is unreal. Thank you to everyone who's watched that video. Thank you to everyone who's contributed to that video as well. Really do appreciate that. And it's crazy when a video pops like that. I don't do it for the views. I just do it because I enjoy discussing movies and movie topics. But when a video pops like that and you get so many different opinions and comments, it's really cool to see. And that's what I love to see in the Movie Cheer Town community. Different people throwing in their opinions. Well, look, and some opinions I don't agree with, and that's fine. But I just love hearing opinions, and we can discuss it. That's what I love. And like, that was just a great video, great example. There's tons of different topics in there. People just getting in on different topics. I loved it. I thought it was ace. Get in the comments. If you've not watched it, watch that video. Get in the comments. Don't leave a comment for yourself, but get in other conversations as well. Get in, someone leaves a comment on it and check out the comment, reply to their comments as well. It's, get involved with the community, I think is ace. I love it. That's what I love. This is what I love about doing YouTube and doing podcasts, and I think it's great. Just the fun of interaction. This is what it's all about, community. With that, with that, the community's over, the channel's over. with that as well, we had loads of new subs over the past month. And, you know, the goal for this year was kind of like a goal. I thought it'd be cool to try and get to 1,000. I think we're nearly 990 around that mark now or something like that. So we're getting closer to the 1,000 mark. I think it'd be cool for the channel, for the community to get up to 1,000 subs by the end of the year. It's not the end of the world if we don't, but if we do, that'd be cool. But I just want to say this month, I think there's been like 60 or so new subscribers to the channel. I don't know if you watched every video. I don't know if you watch certain videos. If maybe you're never going to get to this. But I just want to say a big thank you to all our new subs. Welcome to the community. And also, as always, big, huge thank you to everyone who has been a valued member of this community. You know, I for being before, you know, if you're not a new sub, you're an old subscriber. I appreciate you being a subscriber and being a part of the Movie Cheer Town community. I do really appreciate it. So thank you. I will say next week, the plan of action really is for the rest of the year now. The next episode of the pod to be the last one for 2023. Because I usually take a break around, I think last year I did it, but got a few things coming up on December. So December is going to be a bit of a busy month. It's a busy month for everyone. So I'm kind of going to, plan of action is to take December off. So the plan of action as of now is next week will probably be the last episode of the podcast for 2023. Not forever. We'll be back in 2024. If I can get time, I will. If I have free time, I'd love to just jump on, just do like a Movie Cheer Town live stream, something like that maybe. Maybe do a quick topics episode. I'll see what we're up to. Not saying that'll be the last episode of the year, but it will definitely be the last episode of the podcast for the year. So tune into next week. We'll see what the topic is going to be for next week's show. And yeah, looking forward to it. But that will be the last episode of the podcast for this year, for sure. But yeah, that is it for the episode. If you enjoyed today's episode of the podcast, please do leave a like, give it a like and leave a comment if you're watching on YouTube. And please do subscribe to the channel as well. If you're listening to this on a podcast app of your choice, please do leave a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast on that app. All your support really does help the channel to grow and the podcast to grow even further. And let me know your thoughts on today's topics, 2013 movies. What did you think of my 4 movie picks for that year? What are some of your favorite movies from 10 years ago in 2013? What are some of your favorite movies from that year, ladies and gents? Also, Case Cover Collision, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, which one was your favorite cover? Have you watched that movie yet? Do you think maybe I've not chosen the best cover for that Case Cover Collision result? Let me know your thoughts. The Amazon top 10 for this week as well. Oppenheimer, is it a deserving top 10 winner? Let me know all your thoughts. Big thank you to everyone who has been involved in the episode over the past week. Contributions, you know, collaborations, as always. It doesn't work without the Movie Cheer Town community. Big thank you to all of you out there. Thank you very much. That is it for another show. Thank you very much for watching, ladies and gents. Remember to spread a bit of movie cheer. And as always, I will see you next time.